again, everybody. Initial reaction. I'm J.R. Radcliffe, and I am joined by a special guest, because he is calling in remotely. He gets to be a special guest today. J.P. Kadoran, new father of Time Warner Cable Sports Channel. J.P., you have a child now. Congratulations.
Thank you. We've made it to day 10. Little baby Luca is alive, well, and sleeping. So I call that the trifecta.
Everybody wants to know when you have a child how the child and or the parents are sleeping. It's like a universal need people have. That's the first thing they ask. You know that,
correct,
right?
And you have already asked me prior to this podcast, so you already
jokingly
know the answer. And,
jokingly, because it drives me nuts when people ask that question. It's like, of course I'm not sleeping. I have a newborn.
Yeah, I don't think we found the only baby that has a regular sleep schedule in his first couple days of life. So
right,
if anybody
right
knows how babies work, they know what's going on right now.
Yeah, that's true. And it can be a little arduous, but we missed you. You didn't get a chance to go to the state football championships because, you know, new baby and all. But
that was rough.
Yeah, I'm sure it was tough watching on your couch, snuggling with your newborn. Very disappointing few days for you, while others suffered in the cold, granted in the press box cold, which is not akin to the outside cold, which was pretty oppressive over the last week and a half or so. But congrats again, and very glad that you can join us for another round of initial reaction. So since you got a chance to sit there and watch the state football championships, what did you see? What struck you from the TV vantage point?
Well, Kimberly. I mean, that's
Kimberly.
That's step one. I mean, they have won titles in the past in Division II, and we've talked about, well, were they the best team in the state, or were they just the best team in Division II? And we finally got to find out, and my goodness, was it a resounding answer. You were certainly watching the game closer than I was, since I was tending to diapers and crying and all sorts of
yes
things during the game. But it's just really interesting that now any discussion of high school football in Wisconsin has to start with Kimberly, and they don't show any signs of slowing down either.
No, they don't. And it's impossible when you want to say the best team ever, best program
yes
ever. You just can't do it. But this Kimberly team is obviously in the conversation. Just the run they've been on, three championships in 4 years, to do it in D1. And Arrowhead, I know that they weren't thought of as a team that could hang with Kimberly because they have a few losses this year, but all their losses have been close to elite teams that got deep into the postseason. They all got to level three or further, and the only reason McGuanago didn't is because they got beat by Arrowhead. And so to kind of put a pretty big number on Arrowhead is really hard to do. It's been a few years since a team has scored that many points against them. That's still a really, really good Arrowhead team. And let me tell you, they're going to be even better next year because they return their quarterback, their entire offensive line, and various pieces on both sides of the ball. So they will – I really think this could be your rematch of the D1 state title game next year, assuming Kimberly – again, has the enrollment to be up at D1. But, yeah, right now Kimberly is an unstoppable freight train of success, and I think that was clearly borne out by what we saw just a few nights ago.
Then you were at the game of Arrowhead and Sun Prairie 2 seasons ago.
Yeah, that's right, when Arrowhead had a running clock for much of the second
and
half.
And that one, they were undefeated, just dominated in the state final. How would you compare this Kimberly team to that Arrowhead team?
That's a good question. I wasn't anticipating such to be put on the spot.
Well, I'm
as
a reporter.
Such.
It's what I do.
That Arrowhead team was still sort of building towards really the team that everyone looked at was the one last year, but then last year's team went and lost to Homestead, and that sort of killed the energy around calling that team maybe the best ever. That team had multiple Division I recruits on the defense. Billy Hirschfeld, Sam C. and Buckner come to mind. Matt Seitz, who's starting for Whitewater right now as a freshman, or at least playing for Whitewater as a freshman. I don't know if he's starting, but I mean, very good players. And then plenty of weapons on the offensive side of the ball as well. I mean, last year's team was supposed to be even better than the year before, and maybe it was. They both won state titles. Hard to compare them. I think Kimberly has the playmakers. Haven't seen the same level necessarily of D1 talent in terms of individuals, but as a cohesive unit, I mean, I think you could say that that Kimberly team is every bit as good as that Arrowhead team. Just the way they pasted everybody throughout the course of the year, and that was sort of what that Arrowhead team had done. They hadn't been tested all year, and not even in the championship game. So some really, really, I don't know how you could compare them, just because a couple of years separate them, but sure. Yeah, both very elite, the best of the best.
Yeah, I think
for sure.
You can probably make the argument that Kimberly wasn't tested as much throughout the year. Like, you used the word pasted.
Yes, I did.
Basically every opponent this year, even Appleton North, who's usually their biggest rival and their main competitor in the VFA, they even handled them pretty well. Whereas Arrowhead, they still get good games from Waukesha West, Catholic Memorial. This year, Muckwonago and Muskego, obviously Homestead. So they were probably a little more tested 2 years ago than Kimberly was. But, I mean, they have any sort of bragging rights now for the next foreseeable future because they pasted Arrowhead. So yeah. I think that's good. And then I think it's interesting to look at Menasha, too, in Division II. They used to be in the same conference as Kimberly. And then they made the move to the Bay Conference this year, went undefeated, were very, very good throughout the regular season. As we had discussed on the podcast, I thought that they kind of slipped up a little bit in the playoffs and weren't going to make as deep of a run, but here they are, too.
And some discussion, too, in the press box about, well, it would be nice if Menasha and Kimberly could rematch, because last year they had a very competitive battle that Kimberly ended up winning. But I'm sure Menasha would like, now that they don't have to face Kimberly every year, they'd like to say, well, hey, we won the D2 title. Let's similar discussion to last year when Arrowhead won D1 and Kimberly won D2, how great it would be to see them match up to determine who the true champion of all of Wisconsin football would be. I think this year you'd still be able to safely say Kimberly is the better team, but Menasha really impressed me. And I believe, JP, that I was the one believing in Menasha when you said you thought Homestead would get them or various teams throughout the playoffs would get them. And here Menasha wins the state championship. I win.
Nope.
Don't
I don't remember that at all. Never happened.
It's recorded. It's on past podcasts. I can look it up. It's in an audio archive.
Yes. So overall, I did say Menasha was flipping. I did say I didn't think Arrowhead would make it. I did say Kimberly would win, but then again, that wasn't exactly going out on a ledge. So.
Yeah, right. That's like saying the Patriots will beat the Jaguars the next time those two teams play.
hey.
However, I guess that's actually not fair because, like I said, Arrowhead had a really tough schedule. You're talking about comparing schedules. And Menasha, I think maybe the first couple rounds of the playoffs, you could say, well, not having that FVA competition maybe hurt them a little bit. But they certainly righted the ship. And that Homestead win was one of the more ridiculous playoff outcomes we've had in a while in level four, where they come back, finally get on the scoreboard in the final 30 seconds of the game, go for two and win 8-7, and then they get the big win over Waukesha West. I thought those two teams, Waukesha West and Menasha, were pretty evenly matched coming in. I thought they showed it on the field. It just turnovers. I mean, turnovers seem to find a way to make a huge impact, and that was the case here. Waukesha West committed a couple in a sequence of plays in the fourth quarter, and Menasha all of a sudden had a fairly comfortable win on their hands and a Division II championship.
Yeah, I was going to say, what was the difference in that game? Was it basically just no Joe Sherbert to break any state records for Waukesha
Sherbert,
West?
The man. Certainly having Joe Sherbert would help, particularly the version that's currently playing for the Wisconsin Badgers, because dude is awesome. But turnovers is it. I thought those were two pretty even teams. I think Connor Blount, their quarterback for Waukesha West, who's already started 2 years and he's still going to be back next year, I thought he made some really good plays. He threw an interception that was pretty costly because it was over the middle, and Seifert, I believe, is the name of the player, Dominic Seifert, who returned it for Menasha for a touchdown. At the time, it was 21-17 Menasha, but West had just gotten a stop. They had momentum. It was the first couple plays of the fourth quarter. And that interception completely turns the complexion of the game around. West fumbles two plays later, West fumbles two plays later. It's all over at that point. So that's it. Two really good teams, and one just, you know, you hear the coach say the cliche, made a couple more plays than we did. That's exactly what happened. Menasha made a couple more plays than Waukesha West did, and the Blue Jays win their first state championship. Not bad.
Players make plays. Players win games. Right, Gary Anderson?
That doesn't even make any sense. It doesn't make sense.
And then D3, really happy for Wisco. Kirk DeNoyer is one of my favorite guys in the entire Wisconsin football landscape to talk to, and really, really happy for them too.
Yeah, I said this on Twitter. I always feel like Wisconsin Lutheran is in the state championship game, so it was kind of a surprise to me to see that they hadn't won one since 2007. That there had been that many years in between. But clearly, we've talked about this, one of the best programs in the state year in and year out. It goes without saying. And they were just significantly better than Rice Lake. Rice Lake had beaten West Appear, which was a heck of an accomplishment in Level 4 to get to the championship game. And it was just Wisco's year. I was wrong about them. I was down on the Little 10, and I didn't think that they'd been tested enough that they could beat teams like Catholic Memorial and get into the championship game as easily as they did. But they were the best team in D3, and it wasn't close. A very impressive performance.
What if Henry Ellenson played for Rice Lake?
I think the coach of the Marquette basketball team would be very, very uncomfortable watching Rice Lake get all the way to the championship game.
Would he play? Would he be a tight end? Would he be a wide receiver? Or would he be like an O-lineman? Because he's enormous.
He'd be a tight end. He'd be the most unguardable tight end in high school football because he can run. So you've got to make use of that.
My goodness.
Yeah. He would definitely look good in a football uniform, but that said, that was a pretty big spread. I'm not sure one player as enormous as Henry Ellenson would have been. I'm not sure that makes a difference. I think Wisco's your D3 champ regardless.
The state overall, how would you rank, or how would you rate State Championship Friday at Camp Randall Stadium?
Well, the hot dogs are still terrible up at the press box, and I don't like to complain about them because you just don't get food when you cover a game normally. But honestly, those are the leftover hot dogs from the Badger game the previous week. They just are. It's awful.
So why did you eat five of them?
That's a really good question. No, I had one and was regretting it pretty much the rest of the day. I got there right at lunchtime. Right as Wisco for the second half of that game, and I definitely regretted it. Overall, you know, it was okay. Championship Thursday and Friday, not necessarily the time to get really competitive games. So we had a nice D2 game for a while, and then it kind of got out of hand. So I always like to see games that come down to the wire. I've seen some really good ones over the years, but really they're few and far between. So this was okay, just an okay from me.
Gotcha. All right. I mean, still, I'm trying to think how many different state events I would rather cover than an empty Camp Randall Stadium. I know we had talked about a venue podcast, but then I believe Baby got in the way.
Yes, that's true. So it's been delayed.
But the main point there is just that Camp Randall is cool and all, and I'm sure that players enjoy playing where the Badgers play, but it's a terrible environment.
I wouldn't call it terrible per se, but it's definitely not ideal in terms of. Just a really great fan experience because it's expansive. They're empty on both ends of the field for sure. It's cold. I think it'd be more entertaining perhaps to play at someplace like Perkins Stadium at Whitewater where it's a little bit more cozy environment. You get a little bit louder, gets a little bit louder, more exciting. But I think the cachet of the Badgers will always live on in this case, and everyone's going to want to play on that field.
I guess. I don't like it, though. even podcast substitute guest Travis Wilson was saying he got a few retweets about holding it maybe at Oshkosh. Stevens Point was brought up, although I think Stevens Point was shot down, but maybe a different venue. So I don't think it's ever going to change, but I would like to at least have a discussion about it.
Yeah, and I think we should talk about the venues definitely in an upcoming podcast because I still think that's a really good fodder. There's a lot of possibilities for a lot of these sporting events, and as we head in the winter season, we can attach those on as well.
Sure.
But you had mentioned Gary Anderson a little earlier,
he's
coach of the Wisconsin Badgers football team.
Move on to the next topic.
And I did notice that the Wisconsin Badgers football team defeated Iowa in a close game, very close game at. What's the name of that? It's not Carver Hawkeye. That's the basketball
arena.
Place. Where do they play football?
Kinnick Stadium, the 1939 Heisman Trophy winner. No big deal.
Whatever. And you, an Iowa graduate, an alum, I'm sure were paying attention to the game despite having a newborn child. And tell me what you thought of that. What did you think of that game?
I thought it was a absolutely fantastic game.
It was a good game.
I thought it was fantastic. I have no problem with Iowa losing it. I think if they played that well, I mean, there are so many mistakes that Wisconsin left out there on the field, and same with Iowa. I think if both teams played that well, Wisconsin would not have lost to Northwestern, and Iowa would not have lost to Minnesota or Maryland, or Iowa State for that matter. So I thought it was a good game. Melvin is impressive. I think it's interesting, and I hate this phrase, but if you take away his 88-yarder, you know, he only had 112 then on the ground. So they more or less contained him-ish, at least for Melvin Gordon levels. But That's what he does. He can take one play that you think was broken and turn it into an 88-yard play and set up a touchdown. I think the Tanner McAvoy touchdown run is what stands out to me, just because there's really nothing fantastic about that play call. But the way that it was executed and the running that Tanner did, the ability to fake out the secondary, was just really it was kind of a special play. The fact that Joel Stavi seals the game on a run, on a quarterback keep and a quarterback sneak, very, very interesting, just the way that it worked out. So congrats to Wisconsin. I can't believe that Minnesota is actually playing for something the final week of the season.
No, the axe and all the marbles.
Oh, my goodness. The axe is just a little footnote at this point. It's just a little little trophy that would be nice to have. But the real trophy is getting that West Division title, and I cannot believe that Minnesota has a chance to win.
I know. It's a great situation for the Big Ten to have it sort of come down to this final weekend, winner-take-all between Minnesota and Wisconsin. I really like the way that the Badgers' defense played, especially in the first half.
Yeah.
It obviously snowballed on them a little bit. But you just look at those guys. It's mind-boggling what Dave Aranda, the defensive coordinator, is able to do. I mean, Joe Schobert had a great game. We talked about him, Waukesha West guy. Marcus Trotter from Milwaukee Marquette, another one. Those guys, they were not – recruited by Wisconsin. I mean, they were to a degree, but Marcus was a walk-on. Joe Schobert was a very late commit who basically had a great state tournament run and wound up getting sort of a late offer. I don't remember if that was a gray shirt offer at first or how that came to pass, but a two-way player at Waukesha West, and they put him at linebacker and they bulk him up. And these are the guys that they're working with. These are Wisconsin kids, by and large, kids that were not heavily recruited at all, and they're making a ton of plays.
And Derek Landish and Vince Beagle as well.
Yeah, well, and Vince Beagle was heavily recruited,
for sure.
Derek Landish was, for the most part as well.
Yeah. I mean, I still remember, it's funny you brought them up, those two guys, Schobert and Trotter, are two of the most interesting signing day stories I can remember. Just because with Trotter, I still remember going to bed the night before, planning out my day of where to go. Marcus and Michael Trotter both went to Marquette High School. Marquette had six Division I signees that day. That was the year after they won the state title with Dick Basham as their head coach,
right.
And all that stuff. And Wisconsin had offered Michael Trotter, the safety, because he was, I'm going to call him the more brash player. He was, he had bigger hits. He was more demonstrative.
But he was a defensive back, like
yeah,
you said.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's a linebacker now at Wisconsin, but at the time he was the smaller of the two, but he was a defensive back. So it made sense.
Yep. And so they had offered him a scholarship, and Marcus was planning on walking on, I believe, at Minnesota the night before, but then something changed, and that morning he had a Wisconsin hat on, and I asked him, what's going on? And he said, changed my mind, I'm going to Wisconsin, I'm going to walk on. And now you look, well, really, it's 5 years later at this point. Marcus is playing at I would call him maybe like a second team or honorable mention All Big Ten player with the amount of tackles he's racked up and the amount of tackles for loss. He's one of the star players. And Michael, like you said, is a linebacker now. He's bounced around positions, and he's buried on the depth chart, which is really interesting. And then Joe Schobert's story. Schobert was walking on to a school in the Dakotas. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't remember. Was it North Dakota State?
Yeah,
I don't remember.
North Dakota, North Dakota State, South Dakota, or South Dakota State. I believe it was North Dakota. We're going to go.
I bet the people who live up there hate it, that nobody outside of the Dakotas can differentiate between these
All
programs,
I know
by the
is
way.
South Dakota State, because they are the Jackrabbits.
Jackrabbits, yes, Nate Walters.
Exactly. And, I have an inside joke with a friend. We bought South Dakota State T-shirts after their March Madness run. We're big Jacks fans. Anyway,
I picked them to win. They played Duke or something. I picked them to win. I really believed that was going to happen. They got crushed.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah, so Schobert was committed to them all the way up until the All-Star game, the high school football senior All-Star game that July. And then he rushed for something like 150 yards, was hurdling defenders, just had an unbelievable performance. Yeah. And that's when the high school coaches got on the phone with Brett Bielema and told him, why is this kid getting out of state? You need him on the team. And then a couple weeks later, he was heading to Madison. So those two, I mean, that's a really, really big tangent there, talking about them being good for the Badgers. But those two players have two of the most interesting recruiting stories I've ever seen, and now they're starring for the Badgers.
I remember Joe Schobert's – I feel like it tailed on even into the coach's All-Star game in the middle of summer, that it was still not clear where he was going, or that it was still thought that he was going to the Dakota school that we can't remember.
Yeah.
I don't remember for sure if it lasted that long, but I remember it being so late. And not to sell these guys short as just like projects in high school. I mean, Marcus Trotter was awesome for Marquette. I remember him destroying Arrowhead in that state semifinal. It was a 35-0 game to get to state, where they ended up beating Menominee Falls, I believe, 7-0 in the championship game.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah, that Marquette team was amazing, and their defense in particular. And Marcus Trotter, in my mind, was a Division I player. He had the measurables, and he certainly looked the part on the field. So it's not like these guys are also-rans. It's just for whatever reason they were slipping through the cracks. And to have so many of those guys on, really on that defense, and to have them still be so successful is really a testament to what Dave Aranda and what the Badgers just in general are able to pull off. Because I don't know how they should be as good as they are. And then on offense, they have the workhorse. They have Melvin Gordon to turn to. And, yeah, you want to subtract his 88-yard run. He still had a huge impact on the game. And the 88-yard run didn't even result in a touchdown. It ended up being a field goal at the end of that. So really, really just, I think, a good gutty performance for the Badgers to get themselves in position. I feel like that's a team that can beat Ohio State or whomever they face in that Big Ten title game. I don't know if it'll work out that way, but it sure, I feel very confident with what they have going on right now, even after barely surviving Iowa, that they are good enough to get into to win the Big Ten championship.
Yeah, and I'm still, and I've caught heat for it throughout the year, I still don't believe in that defense. I believe, and we can check this, I think that Iowa is actually the best offense that Wisconsin has faced all year in terms of yards per game. And they're 67th in the nation. I mean, that's an indicator as to the level of competition Wisconsin has faced. And you can't necessarily hold that against them. Statistically, Wisconsin's defense has been incredible. The problem is they just haven't done it against that great of teams. But then again, so this is the caveat to that. Well, Nebraska did have a good offense, and then they played Wisconsin. You know, I mean, Amir Abdullah is a fantastic running back until he played Wisconsin. So Minnesota will provide one more test. Obviously, the defense has been good. Obviously, there are playmakers. But for me, if they go up against Ohio State, I don't think this defense can hang with them.
All right. You are on record as saying so. Yeah. I plan on playing that back when we're talking about a Big Ten championship.
I can't wait.
Just
that,
so you know.
That will be my first assignment back, is heading to Indianapolis. So not a not a bad way to break back in. But I will be in Indianapolis to watch what I believe will be the Badgers play Ohio State, and I'll get to see it firsthand.
That will be fun. From your couch yesterday, you got to probably watch a little bit of the Green Bay Packers against the Minnesota Vikings. I went into that game totally believing that it was going to be close. I really thought that, because I know the common perception of a quote-unquote letdown game is a little ridiculous when you're talking to professional athletes. They just are really focused on what's right in front of them. But I refuse to think that the Vikings aren't looking at that game as close to the biggest game that they're going to play all year, knowing that they're kind of out of the playoff picture at this point. And at the same time, the Packers are sandwiching between the Eagles, having played so well, and the Patriots. You knew they weren't going to do the single high safety thing that Aaron Rodgers has been eating for lunch. You knew they would do the cover two. And I just really thought that they were going to find a way to disrupt things for Aaron Rodgers. They did. I mean, it was just a hunch. I had no evidence to back that up, but it was a hunch, and the Packers had to gut it out. Was never worried they were going to win. Just I knew it was going to be a little dicey, and it was a little dicier than I thought it would be. But did you lose a little faith in the Packers machine watching them against Vikings?
Not necessarily. I mean, I definitely thought it would be a blowout, and it wasn't, so that's fine. I mean, that counts a little bit. But I think a lot of players probably said this after the game. It doesn't matter how you win. I mean, at this point, you just got to pile them up. At this point, they're second in the NFC. They're poised for a bye and home field advantage because of Detroit's loss, and especially with a big game against the Patriots, you got to stack up wins when you can, because I don't think a win is going to come as easily this upcoming Sunday. Also, do want to say right away, it wasn't that hard to correct myself. Nebraska has the 30th best offense in the country, so they had a good offense until they played Wisconsin.
That's right. And I believe their defense, their run defense, was really good, like 11th in the nation going into that game. And then Melvin Gordon ran for 406 yards. Now the second highest.
Come on, if you're going to give him some love, get his 1 week old record correctly.
Yeah, I know. No, a record that lasted 1 week. That's amazing. So what a mind-boggling
thing. And here's the thing, though. Gordon didn't get a single carry in the fourth quarter. I mean, it's almost not fair to the kid to take the record away from him.
Well, sort of. Yes, the Samaj played in the I can't. What's his last name? The kid from Oklahoma, Samaje.
Yeah, sure. Just go with that.
Okay. Well, he played in the fourth. He didn't play. He did play a few snaps in the fourth quarter, but he also didn't play every series prior to that. My understanding is he took a couple series off for whatever reason.
Sure.
And so really, it's kind of apples to apples. I get that there's a rush to defend Gordon's record when it goes away so quickly. It's not that big a deal. Whatever. I mean, yeah, it's too bad, but at the same time, I'm pretty confident the Badgers running back is one of the best in the nation, and I'm pretty confident they'll be playing for some pretty big prizes here at the end of the rainbow.
It's nice that the University of Wisconsin released a stat on their Twitter account that even if Melvin Gordon never had a carry in the fourth quarter all year, his yardage would still lead the nation.
That's incredible.
Isn't that unbelievable?
Isn't it? That's so great. And I he's getting a lot of love right now. Todd McShay could not stop talking about him.
For sure.
At that Iowa game, that he's going to be the best pro back in coming out of Wisconsin in NFL history. And it's funny because that actually isn't – I don't know who the best running back in the NFL has been from Wisconsin. I don't know. Maybe Michael Bennett. It's been kind of a mixed bag for some of the top runners. Terrell Fletcher maybe from several years ago. But it's fun to watch him. It's fun to watch that team play, or it's fun to watch their offense play, or the running game go anyway. I'm a little nervous still when Joel Stabe drops back to pass. But
you know, and I do hear the baby crying, so I think I'm going to have to go shortly. So I'll end it on a bit of trivia. You know what?
What's
that? You know what Melvin Gordon and I have in common?
I don't know.
We both decided to go to Iowa at one point in our lives.
Oh, there that is. Now, how would history be different if he was still – because they didn't want him to be a running back, right?
They
wanted
him to be an athlete.
Oh, why would they do that?
I know. All right, buddy. Time to go tend to the baby.
Whatever, J.P. Kadoran, you and your new baby. Well, thanks for hanging out, and we will surely catch you again very soon.
All right, this has been – just go ahead and say it. Initial reaction.
Continuing to make fun of me even today. Have a good day, everybody. We'll talk to you again.